Today we talk about the art of being completely present in your presentations as we finish our review of Gar Reynolds' excellent book, Presentation Zen. We talk about cell phones and watches, and we have some voicemails today to play, so you're not going to want to miss that, so stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast. As you're probably already aware, this is episode number, 279 for Tuesday, March 12th, 2013. Sally, it's going to be one of those shows.
Good morning, Martin. I think the time change maybe can be to blame.
That's
this is actually an hour earlier than we're used
we're
to recording.
Way off. We're way off.
Internal
filter.
Clocks are screwed up.
This is not going to be good. Yes.
Yeah. And it's snowing.
I'll be good. I was good an hour ago. Is that how that's supposed to work?
Something like that. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's snowing here too, and that seems to be the winter we're kind of having this year. I don't see any sun in our forecast for like 2 weeks. So
I'm ready for spring. We got all excited this weekend because we had some rain, and we thought, well, we'll take the rain if that means spring is coming. But now the snow is back, so
we had rain too, and some of it in our basement, which is not all that fun. So
eek. No,
second time in 8 years it's happened. So when you get this big heavy snow and then the rain, you know, kind of tends to go where it shouldn't go, and one of those places it shouldn't have gone was our basement. So I was at Home Depot on Sunday night trying to find a sump pump, and apparently I wasn't the only one because I had to buy the one off the display.
So. Oh, my word. A little bit of technology to help you out.
Yeah, very low. But well, we should probably get to our topic of the week. And Sally, we are approaching the end of our review of the book Presentation Zen. Excellent book. I use it as a resource in a class that I teach for Martin Luther College online called Dynamic Classroom Presentations. And I guess I would call this kind of the textbook for presentations. So if you are in that space and you do presentations, and I think most of our listeners do to a certain degree, then you probably want to have this on your shelf. And we are up to chapter 7, but we're going to do a double header today, chapters 7 and 8, mostly because chapter 7 is all pictures.
That's right. And Gar gives us a lot of examples in chapter 7. It's called Sample Visuals, Images, and Text. And he gives us a lot of examples in the book of good slides, of slides that have good balance, that aren't just a whole lot of bullet points on the page kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was neat. I did some research and found links to 4 of those example slideshows. So if you follow the links in the show notes, you'll be able to see some of the things that he referenced in the book. For example, do a quick screen share here for those that are watching the video. Out on SlideShare, he actually has a slide deck, Lessons from the Bamboo, where he actually shows a slide presentation that he did. And if you're watching, you're seeing a lot of imagery, but not a whole lot of words that go along with it. So mm-hmm. he's real big on very minimal words and images to go with that.
Yeah, to me, this chapter is probably worth the price of the book itself because pictures do speak louder than words. And I think just looking at the presentation, because they do some before and afters and those kinds of things, it's really helpful to kind of see what a good presentation, a well-designed presentation might look like. And it's easier than you think. It does take some thought and some planning, and you've got to find the right images. But once you get the hang of it, you get the idea of space and how text should lay over it, and you know, white space and balance, and you begin to see how powerful a presentation can be versus just kind of that document that you show on screen that's got a bunch of bullet points.
Right. And, you know, it's more important to have supporting information up on the screen behind you than actually repeating what you're saying to them, where their eyes are going to be reading a whole lot of text. And so the imagery that he selects then goes along with the speech he's giving. It's not the speech he's giving up on the screen.
Right. Right. So it's an aid. It enhances the presentation itself. So, and it's a package deal. And we've talked about that, or he talked about it frequently throughout the book, that it's not just the slides that you're creating. It's the words that you speak and how prepared you are and your approach to it. But also, again, the handouts, you know, that are available. So what does the audience have in front of them as a takeaway or something that they're using throughout the presentation?
Mm-hmm. So this chapter 7, and like I said, there's several of these presentations we'll link to, it kind of wraps up the discussion of the mechanics of how to do it and gives you these great examples that display the things that he's talked about all through this section of the book. And then the book shifts gears, and the last section of the book is titled Delivery. And that's where we get into actually preparing for and giving your presentation and tips and tricks to go along with that. And in that regard, chapter 8, The Art of Being Completely Present, is the first thing that he tackles, being in the moment, being fully present. And we both joked, Martin, that that's not something I'm always the greatest at, or you either, where, you know, we're in a multitasking world and we're used to doing a lot of different things at the same time on our computers, and our brains are used to processing a lot of different things at the same time. But this chapter 8 really just kind of nails you on that and says you got to be in the presentation fully. You can't be thinking about things in the future or things in the past. You got to just live that moment.
Right. And fortunately, you can, I think, get a little more comfortable with the presentation technologies of today, because they will allow you a little peek ahead at the, you know, the next slide. So your brain isn't constantly worried about, you know, what's next, what's next, what's next. So you have the ability to say what you should be saying in the moment, speaking to the topic, using the slide as that aid, as talked about in the book, and then go to the next one, and the next one, the next one. It becomes really critical that you have a single focus. And I think we've all probably heard or listened to different people who are maybe not totally there as they're going through it. They're kind of struggling for what's coming next. And that's probably maybe the biggest differentiator between a good presenter and, you know, a mediocre one, is that the good presenter, you can tell they're totally engaged with the topic. They get it. They're connecting with the audience. They're, you know, there's a back and forth. There's a fluidity to what they're doing versus kind of a stiff outlined, you know, I'm going to get through this material, blah, blah, blah. That's not in the moment. And that's really what this chapter's about.
Right. And one example that they use in the chapter is Steve Jobs, and what a master he was at some really major presentations, doing software demos, doing all kinds of things in his presentations very seamlessly. So the big screen was behind him, and he appeared to be completely oblivious to what's going on behind him, but yet it totally supported what he was presenting and everything. And I loved that they kind of lifted the curtain on all that. It looks so seamless, and he's so charismatic, and he's just the it man kind of thing. No, he and his team worked and prepared and rehearsed and memorized and, you know, did everything they could to make it appear super easy and super smooth. And I think that's where you gotta spend your time. You've got to do the prep in order to be ready to present at that level.
Yep, those two words, prep and you know, preparation, and then you know, the presentation kind of go together. So the better the better you know your stuff, obviously, the better it's going to go. But then the practice side, you know, the practicing of the presentation is something that probably not a lot of us do, especially I could think of a lot of you teachers out there. You don't have time to do that. You're probably just getting this stuff together the night before. But, you know, this really says if you want to be engaging and you want the kids or the audience to really get something out of it, it does take some practice. So there's no way around. There's no shortcut for that.
And how many chances at this do you get? You get one. You screw it up, and there's no redo on that or whatever. Right. So you gotta think about it. I've always been a person who needs to have a vision of where we're going, and that's what you need to do. You need to visualize how you want this to play out. When I do presentations, I like to start at the end and think about what I want them to leave with and walk away with, and kind of just orchestrate or plan the path to get them to that point, you know, and visualize that.
Yeah. A couple other interesting things before we leave this chapter. He talks about mistakes and to recognize that mistakes can happen. You screw up, you know, the wrong slide comes up, or you miscommunicate, or you say something, you know, in a different way, and maybe it's not as clear, whatever. And, you know, the encouragement is, you know, everybody makes mistakes, just go past it. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. But if you're in the moment, you can recover a lot more easily than allowing that to throw you. So that's really important.
Right. And you mentioned that being in the moment. And I think being in the moment allows you to be a little bit more flexible and open to things that are going on with your audience. And that's a key point that Garb pulls out of this chapter as well. You don't have to be real static and stick to the script, but you can be a little bit more flexible when you have that confidence and you know what your ultimate goal is. Then you can react and work that into what you're doing.
Yeah, it's not, the point of it is not to get through all the material. That shouldn't necessarily be the goal. It's communicating the big idea, and hopefully your leave behinds allow for some of those gaps to be filled in, and you can reference those. So it's kind of, again, it's a package deal. So good stuff in this chapter. Sally, I think we have, what, one more or two more chapters?
We have three more. We're going to do it in the next two months. Right.
Okay, we're going to combine a couple. Okay, chapter 9, connecting with an audience, which is kind of a nice takeoff of this chapter. How do you know that you know, things are in sync there? So that's a good.
And then we'll wrap it up in May with chapters 10 and 11. 11's really short. So, two more months.
Okay. In this book, though, probably 2-3 months ago, we talked about a very important aspect of presentations, and that was the art of storytelling or story. And a very intriguing chapter and something very important in presentations as you're trying to, you know, bring somebody along and you're narrating you know, kind of an introduction, you know, the main theme and the plot, and then ultimately the conclusion. Very important part. And we thought that that would be a great opportunity to find one of our Synod's better storytellers to come on the show, and that's Professor Mark Poustian from Martin Luther College. He's written a couple books, not necessarily about storytelling, but utilizing the art of storytelling. We asked him to come on and talk a little bit about that technique and how a Christian can use storytelling, because the Bible, of course, is full of stories, how they can use those stories to share the gospel with their friends, family, and those people that they meet. So let's listen to our interview with Mark to talk about his books and the art of storytelling. Joining us today on the podcast, Professor Mark Poustian from Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Martin.
Thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time. I realize you have a busy schedule, and so we carved out a little early morning time to do this. And Mark's coming to us from his basement in New Ulm there. So appreciate the time, Mark.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, why don't you take a couple minutes and tell us a little bit about your role at Martin Luther College, a little bit about your background as well.
Okay. Well, background first, I guess. It's almost 25 years ago now, called into pastoral ministry. My first call was to a mission start in Rockford, Illinois. So knocking on doors, that whole kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Did that for 12 and a half years. It was blessed beyond what I could imagine. And surprised everybody, I think myself too, by accepting a call to Martin Luther College. That was at the end of 2000. Mm-hmm. And that's where I serve now. I teach communication, interpersonal communication mostly, and also senior Hebrew. And I coach the men's and women's cross-country team as well. So that's my bailiwick right now.
Okay, very good. And you're also an author, and that was one of the reasons we wanted to spend a little time with you. A couple of books that many of our listeners probably have heard of, if not read, Prepared to Answer and More Prepared to Answer. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about why you wrote the books and how you have observed people using them.
Okay. Well, I wrote the books because the publishing house asked me to
write books. Yes, okay.
I was very honored by that. They asked me to write books that would deal with the questions that skeptics have and questioning people have. It just so happened that at the time in my congregation, we had been doing some experimenting sort of in Sunday morning Bible study. We had a series, I think it lasted 2 years or more, in which we would simply study gospel stories mostly. And at the last 15 minutes or 20 minutes of class, we would explore, I don't know, who needs to hear this story and how the story might be used in communication. You know, we would explore the law content of each story and how each story leads to Christ. And we would talk about the difficulties maybe of using a story, you know, what things might need explaining and so on. And so we were midstream in that at the time that I got the phone call from the publishing house. And my first question was whether they would appreciate me bringing gospel narratives into the approach. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a nice serendipity the way this all happened. As I wrote the books, you know, you never know if you're onto something or not. So
right.
I always just told myself, if all I'm doing is writing for my kids, you know, telling my own children why I believe in Jesus in a very expanded way, then it would be worth it. Mm-hmm. But I've been very gratified. I think many people use the books devotionally. I know that there are Bible study groups and discussion groups. One high school I know of uses these books in their religion curriculum, which I'm honored by. So a variety of uses. It's been about maybe 3 years ago, the first time I heard from somebody who by God's incredible grace, wrote to me to say that my books were a part of them coming to know him. And so I do know of people that graciously buy books and buy these and give them to friends and neighbors just to read. So I think to some degree they're used as inspiration for training in evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
I think mainly it's just the idea. You know,
right.
I don't know if the books themselves work for that, but the idea of studying the gospel stories together,
mm-hmm.
learning to love them, and then beginning to make more and more the connection between those stories and such a wide variety of real life experiences.
Yeah, that was really key for me as I read through them. Very flexible. They can be used in a lot of different ways, but mm-hmm. just kind of what they reinforce, the beauty of Scripture and mm-hmm. the use and its application for many different circumstances, whether it be for yourself or as you share the love that you have in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just awesome tools for that purpose, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking on the podcast about presentation skills. We've been actually reviewing the book Presentation Zen, and the big chapter in that book is about storytelling. And you mentioned, you know, that the narrative and, you know, the storytelling that is the Bible in many cases mm-hmm. was a big part of your book. Why is storytelling an important means to share the gospel?
Big question for 7 in the morning.
I didn't say this would be easy, Mark. I'm sorry.
No, it's fun to talk about. Part of it is just what you said. It's taking our cues from the scriptures, really. I think there's a whole menu of choices for how to communicate that we find in scriptures. There's very systematic things. There's metaphor. Very kind of reason-based things, in a sense. The Apostle Paul's tightly structured argument, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a great part of God's word does come to us in this form of narrative. So we're not being any great innovators here, I should say.
Right.
I think stories, one of the appeals for me is stories have an indirectness to them. And that is that I really don't beat you over the head with a certain truth. I give you a story that is, just by virtue of how narrative works, it's probably very sticky. It's very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of leave you alone with the story and give you a certain space to contemplate the meaning of it. And I think that indirect style of communication really is very effective for a lot of people, especially questioners. So when I wrote the books, it was pretty much on instinct that I just felt stories were powerful and effective. But since then, I've had a chance to do quite a bit more studying of narrative. There's a man named Walter Fisher who is famous for what's called the narrative paradigm. And so here's a premier scholar who really thinks this is what human beings are. Really, mm-hmm. We're storytelling creatures.
Yep.
And he really thinks this is how the brain is actually hardwired to think. That he thinks all of communication, if you think about it, can be thought of in terms of narrative. And so his study has to do with how people are actually persuaded. And he thinks maybe narrative is more persuasive than we realize in comparison to the whole paradigm that uses reason alone.
Right.
So I think, there's just so much here. Stories have an appropriate emotional content to them and a very appropriate human content to them. But again, it's the indirectness that I come back to.
Sure.
It's the leaving you with something very, very sticky and giving you space to contemplate what the meaning is.
Mm-hmm. Well, God certainly used that powerfully throughout Scripture and used it in the creation of Scripture, that act of storytelling, that art of storytelling, passing it from generation to generation until it was ultimately written down. As I read, and we live in an age, unprecedented age, where digital communication or the ability to share a story, your story or God's story, is very easy. At least to put it online and get it out there. And those authors that I appreciate reading online do exactly that. Mm. Now we've kind of moved into beyond just the one-dimensional storytelling or narrative to this concept of social networks where we're interacting with each other, with networks like Facebook and more maybe in short bites. In your opinion, how do social networks like Facebook fit into, let's say, personal evangelism, this ability to share the story and share your story and hear everybody else's story?
Obviously a very big question. I don't know if anybody really feels like they've caught up yet
right.
as far as what social networking is really doing to communication.
Yeah.
One thing I appreciate about this generation, though, is the younger generation especially, is that they seem to connect purely for the sake of connecting. And I think they maintain their connections extremely well. I have to think somehow there's great potential, great usefulness just in that for God and for the Lord of the Church. I'm not on Facebook a lot, but most of the people who friend me on Facebook are students of mine and former students of Martin Luther College. And I just think there's an extraordinary Christian content to what they're writing about on Facebook. And there's the potential, you make a post and then you post a YouTube video of some incredible Christian music or Christian art of some kind. And so it's really kind of all media that is being exploited by Facebook. I think that's probably pretty important. I think most of the concerns some people have about what digital media is doing to us and to our brains and so on is that to some degree they feel like the capacity for abstract thinking is what is being eroded to some degree. As you mentioned, the messages are very soundbite. They're very short. The medium is a message, which means just that the media is constraining in many ways how we communicate.
Right.
But I think that it sort of can mean that narrative becomes all the more important when communication is going to need to be somewhat more emotive, somewhat more imaginative, I think, for this generation. So I think, I'm kind of all over the place, but I think Facebook really has an extraordinary potential just because of the multimedia that can convey Christian content.
Sure.
And really just as an enhancement, not that anybody wants us to tuck ourselves out of being clear in our gospel witness and witnessing, also in very traditional ways.
Right.
But just as an enhancement of that, I think the connectivity of this generation has to have potential that our Lord can use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I look at uses of Facebook like Josh Renner, who was featured in Forward in Christ a few months back, and his Facebook efforts, He Loved Us First, which is basically just posting a short Bible verse and a picture, beautiful piece of Christian art, and just the conversations that are going on around a simple picture and a simple passage, that becomes, in my mind, the narrative. I mean, as people are interacting and building a story together, that's where I see maybe social networking fitting in, a totally different concept, but not too different than maybe just a spark that creates a meaningful conversation. So to close the interview, let me ask you, as an educator, let me ask you a typical educator question, and who teaches future educators, of course. What types of communication skills do you feel are really essential to embed in these youths that are coming out of your school in this new digital age? What kind of tools do they have to have?
Well, one thing that's interesting is to me is I think that media is like a first language for them and more of a second language for me. So whenever digital media comes up, I feel like a student among students.
Really. Yes.
Completely. We do one interesting thing in my class. It's motivated by Neil Postman, who wrote a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death. Anyway, the idea is to have a 24-hour media fast. So I have my students spend 24 hours without any media and then reflect on what that experience was like. And first of all, they learn that it takes them about 2 weeks to plan this day. Because they have to, they have to let family and friends know.
That's right.
They won't be in contact. They have to plan on doing homework without a computer and so on. But the effect has really been interesting. Almost all students will say that they notice their stress level going down. And some students, I've only done it one time so far, but it's definitely a keeper assignment that I'll keep doing. But there have been students that speak about a sort of a hunger for human contact. And on that 24-hour period, they went looking for people to talk to face-to-face.
Yeah.
And some reflected on how there was something that they had been missing, So I've been thinking more about the hyperconnectivity of this generation and that there are some negative effects on that that come from that, high stress, even worse than that.
Right.
So partly the point is not to free our students from media, because that's not the world we live in. But
yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
No, but to carve out some free media time in your life, to learn there are times you can turn the cell phone off and not check Facebook necessarily.
Right.
And experience, and I guess not lose track of, to me, face-to-face will always be, I don't know what to call it, the highest things that happen between us face-to-face that are quite extraordinary. When it comes to the full richness of communication. So part of the skills that I get into, I'm probably a fuddy-duddy kind of to some degree on all of this, but certain human contact, certain things like letter writing, handwritten letter writing, certain things like being in a coffee shop without the cell phone on, I think become all the more important.
Right.
And not only can they maybe become sensitive to that through the media fast and become sensitive to the need to have some solitude sometimes,
Right.
But they can help other people with that as well.
Yeah. Well, I suppose even with that media on, there needs to be a new kind of discipline, that happens where you control the number of inputs and the temptation to fall into that, ultra hyper connectivity that really, I see that in productivity circles too. I teach a class on productivity. That's a big killer, where you're easily distracted and you can't focus. And as I think of our future educators, think of the kids they're teaching, and the hyper connectivity that will be a part of their lives. So I think it's a really important skill set and something that they need to be aware of. So good. Mark, thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate you doing that. Blessings on your work, and thank you for sharing your insights.
God bless you, Martin. Thank you, too. Great to talk to you.
Thanks once again, Mark, for coming on the show and talking about your books. Sally, I don't know if you've read these. I've read them both, and I'm just amazed at some of the simplicity, but also the just the uniqueness that is Scripture and how that can be used by each one of us to share some powerful stories.
Definitely. A couple of things that I pulled out of what he said was that stories are indirect. They don't beat you over the head, and they're sticky. They're memorable. And so that gives you the chance to contemplate the meaning, not just, shove it down your throat or whatever. And I think, you know, the reason we talked about storytelling in keeping with presentations and presentations in the book we're reviewing is because it's a great way to get your message across. So right. Certainly communicating the gospel message is number one on all our hearts, but these same techniques can apply to your presentations as well.
Yeah. So if you haven't read the books, pick them up. They're available at Northwestern Publishing House, Prepared to Answer and More Prepared to Answer, both excellent books by Mark. And again, thanks, Mark, for taking
we'll
the time.
We'll have links in our show notes to those. So
we will.
Check it out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Time for our picks of the week.
One of my favorite times. If I knew how to share my screen, I'd be even happier. All right. For those watching the video portion, you'll see that I'm on the Make Use Of website. That's makeuseof.com. And I have my friend, Pastor Rob Gunther, to thank for me finding this site, because recently he sent me an email and said, you want to check out this Raspberry Pi unofficial tutorial available from makeuseof.com. So for those of you that have a Raspberry Pi, you might want to grab their free tutorial that's available here. It's really well done. But that kind of got me exploring Make Use Of a little bit more. I signed up for their email, and you can do that easily on their site, and began to get some really interesting email, things like 10 ways to use your smartphone camera that can make life easier. So they're giving you little ideas like take pictures of your kids if you go into an amusement park, so you know what clothes they're wearing and things like that if you need that information. You know, take pictures of things as you take them apart or whatever. Just some really useful and well thought out ideas. I got another email that said some things should remain private, what not to share on Facebook. Really great primer on how to draw the line and decide what you know you should or shouldn't share there. And these are just a few of the many examples of great content they have on the Make Use Of site. They have a whole list of best of, so cool. You can look at Linux versus Mac. Linux versus Mac versus iPhone and iPad apps and on. You can get tech support. They also have a really great page with all kinds of downloadable cheats and guides, like the Raspberry Pi one I was just showing you. But they have everything from cool uses for live CDs to quick reference kind of cheat sheets. Make Use Of cheat sheets. I think they require you to get an account, which is free. And I think that's probably how you start getting their email and stuff as well. But some really high quality cheat sheets that you can download for free as well.
Keyboard shortcuts and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome.
So all kinds of goodies waiting for you on the Make Use Of site. You know, and I'm really picky about these emails. I don't like to get a lot of email and have a lot to go through my email box, but I have not been disappointed with my subscription on this site. I think it's excellent. It's very, very high quality stuff. I'm reading and learning new things every day from makeuseof.com.
And that there's no cost to that, right?
That's correct. They just want your email address.
Okay, cool. So thanks, Sally. Mm-hmm. My pick is actually a phone. And because of the work I've been doing with the Wells mobile app and trying to get this to work on every platform, which is no small task, I've got a few phones lying around. So I've got one on the three, what I call the three major platforms, iPhone, Android, and now Windows Phone. And some would contend that Windows Phone is not one of the major platforms, but I think it's up and coming. And so recently I switched over to a Windows phone so I could work on the app, but I've kind of adopted it as my go-to phone at this point. And the phone that I'm using is by HTC. It's the 8X. It's been out for maybe 6 months now, maybe 5 months. And now the price is down to like $99. I have the one through Verizon, but the Windows Phone experience is something that I've come to enjoy a lot. I think they have a unique way of presenting the apps that are available. They use this kind of tile interface, and you can resize the tiles, and it's a vertical scrolling mechanism, so it's very easy to actually find the app that you want. You get big buttons to press. And they have something called live tiles so that depending on the application, you can have these tiles show you information about whatever it is that the tile holds. For instance, the calendar app will show you your next appointment. People apps may show a text message from them. Email apps may show the email that came through, whatever. So very cool approach, I think, to applications. So here's if you're looking at the video, here's the phone itself, and comes in different designer colors. This was actually the only color that was available when I got the phone, probably 5 months ago. Very customizable. And I think, I love the battery life and just kind of the approach to how they kind of engineered it. Very smooth. One thing that's really nice about this phone is I'm not sure what glass they use, what screen they use, but it's a lot smoother and seems to be a lot more durable than even the iPhone, which has got a very nice screen to it. I've not been able to mark this up at all. And the best thing about this is it's almost smudge proof. You know how your iPad is just a mess after you're mm-hmm. using it for 5 or 10 minutes. Now, I can be using this all day and I can't even tell that I've touched the screen. So that's a big win as far as I'm concerned. I rarely have to clean this. I probably should clean it just for hygiene purposes, but in general, just a great high resolution screen, just as good as the iPhone. But I like just the construction of it; feels good in the hand. And one downside of Windows phones is you don't have all the apps that you might have on Android or iPhone. And if a new cool app comes out on iPhone or Android, it probably isn't going to come out on Windows Phone for a while. But it's been out long enough that there's only just a couple of omissions that you can't get or have a workaround for on the Windows Phone side, and that's Pandora is not available, which I use a lot, and Instagram is not available on the Windows Phone yet. So if you use those extensively, then this is probably not the best bet. But the probably the best feature in general on Windows Phone, especially if you're a Windows user, is its completely seamless integration with the Office apps and with Outlook, and with you can edit, you can read and edit Office files, Word docs, Excel, PowerPoint. The interface just works nice and seamless with it. If you use SkyDrive, you can pull up all those documents. OneNote, if you use OneNote, you can look at all your OneNote files. Obviously, Windows is going to work. A Windows Phone is going to work well with Windows products. So if you're in that Windows ecosystem, this is probably a great choice for you. So that is my pick of the week, Windows Phone HTC 8X.
Well, you mentioned all kinds of Microsoft products, but Windows 8. I'm just wondering, doesn't that prepare you for the Windows 8 interface?
Same interface. It's not exactly the same, but yeah, the Windows 8 interface is a tile-based one, especially if you have a tablet or something that where you touch it. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's a very similar concept. And I think that's the whole direction that Microsoft is mm-hmm. going, is trying to merge these platforms. So whether you're sure. on mobile, tablet, computer, it's all going to be this tile interface, and they work similarly. Live tiles. So mm-hmm. yeah, you do have live tiles on Windows 8. Yep.
And are you a Windows 8 user at all?
Yeah, I use Windows 8. Me and just a couple of people in the office are trying it out. Just making sure that, once we decide to move to Windows 8 in the office, that it's something that we can live with. Mm-hmm. So it's early days yet, and we're probably a ways away from switching over from Windows 7, but we'll get there eventually. I think it's much more stable. I don't have any crashes. I think it's a little bit speedier, and takes a little while to get used to the interface. Yeah. But once you get over the fact that, that start button is gone and you hit the Windows key just to bring up, your start menu, which is that tiled interface, then it's fine.
Okay. So, interesting. Look at the future. Good
it
stuff.
It is. Yeah. Let's move on to our community feedback. And Sally, I'm excited about feedback this week.
Yeah.
You know why?
I do. I'm going to show our magic button. We have something new on our Wells Tech website. It's the ability to send us a voice message. There's a little button here that you can push, and it comes up and you just start recording. It uses your flash recorder, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it worked. We actually got voicemail. I'm very excited. And you're going to play them for us.
I'm shocked that it actually worked.
It's been a while since we got voicemail. So.
Yep. So let's play the couple of voicemails that we got through this new cool tool.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Martin and Sally. This is Gail Poldretz, and I just finished listening to this week's show. What a great show on publishing. It makes me really want to get some things together and get it out there. I loved your pick, Martin, the Foxish Chrome browser deal. And I've also been frustrated in how to handle Digo on Chrome. I wondered if you knew this. In talking about my frustration with Jason Schmidt, he pointed out that actually if you use there is a Digo extension for Chrome, and I had that, but I didn't really like it at all. But I was missing something in that's very hidden. If you use the Digo extension and you hit the tag option, it actually gives you that same interface that you have when you go and save a bookmark in Digo, where you get to set up new lists or gives you control over where you want to save the bookmark. And that's what I was really missing. So I just wondered if you knew that, and I thought it was worth passing along because a lot of people do use Chrome and Digo. So I've been happy with using the Digo Chrome extension now that I know that if I hit tag, I can get my bookmark to the right place. However, I do think this is a pretty slick way with the Foxish thing to be able to act.
Oops. And apparently you have a minute and a half, and Gail was a little windier than a minute and a half. But great feedback, and that is true. And I did know that. And the interface now, share my screen again. The interface now that they use for Chrome is really cool, where you hit the button and down pops, you know, the a little pop or a little drop down menu, and then you can save that bookmark to wherever you want, which is kind of a similar approach to the way they had before. You could get it all other kinds of information here too, but they made some nice improvements. The reason I use Foxish is it allows me to meld my Digo links into my bookmark bar, you know, in mm-hmm. Chrome, and so I don't have to go into Digo to click all my links. So very good. And that, if that weren't enough, Sally, we got one more voicemail from Russell.
Just heard about your new feature on how to leave a voicemail. I listen to the podcast. I enjoy it. And right now it's 3:40 in the morning as I'm trying to wrap up a project, and the podcast is a great way to keep in tune with what's going on, even though my time is consumed with other things. Thanks, and keep it up.
3:40 in the morning. That is awesome that our podcast is playing at 24/7.
There you go.
And he's leaving voicemails at 3:40 in the morning. That's even better. So
definitely. Thanks for being a listener, Russell. We hope there's lots more of you out there listening, and we'd love to hear from you as well. So push that button and speak to us.
How easy can it get? That's our version of the easy button.
There you go. All right, we have more community feedback to share, and I'm going to start with a little bit of a follow-up on something I shared in the past, and that is that I plan to look at 10 different tools in 2013, and first on my list was BuddyPress, something I hadn't used before, and I finally got around to blogging about it. I was supposed to do it in February, but it ended up being March 6th.
Yeah, with the time change.
With the time change. There you go. That extra hour made all the difference. So the reason that I was delayed was because I really didn't get very far with my BuddyPress install. I called it My Book, real original, thinking that it would be like a personal Facebook. And I do believe BuddyPress has that capability, and you can set up groups, you can add members, you can talk and discuss around different topics and things. But basically what I found out along the way was it's way more of a system than I could possibly deal with in a month's time. And that I didn't really have a huge, you know, vision or need for it. So it's hard to kind of develop it with, you know, no direction. But I did find some great examples. For instance, the Milwaukee School of Engineering uses BuddyPress for their online registration site to communicate with prospective students and things. They have them create an account.
Yeah.
And it's actually a BuddyPress account that they're using. And so it can be a standalone thing, but I think it's more integrated into a blog and having a community as part of that blog.
Right, right.
There's a link in my blog post to the MSOE site, and also a kind of a behind the scenes of how they did their install and how it's all set up. A real good post from the BuddyPress site about the MSOE site. And then I have another link with 13 more examples of BuddyPress, and these are big installs and big examples. So check out some of these, and maybe it'll give you a vision. I will give props to Jim Bauer.
Oh, yeah.
Someone who's listened to the podcast for a while. And when I talked about doing BuddyPress, he sent me to his ELG site, ELGG, a competitor of BuddyPress, basically, another social media kind of site that you can install yourself. And he set one up for his church, Christ Lutheran Church in Baxter, Minnesota. And so if you're interested in looking at an ELG site, you can certainly check out Jim's. After I wrote about my experience, he wrote back and said, you know, he really is the kind of guy who enjoys installing new software and learning about new software. So that's kind of his space. And here's an example where he set up, you know, different groups for the library, for the different leadership, where he's thought through that process. So check all that out. Jim also shared that he is willing to donate space basically for churches and schools to install software and test out things if they're interested. He has a web hosting plan, he says, with 50 cPanels, so 50 different administrative interfaces where people can have access to admin and stuff. And he wanted to just open that up. We can certainly provide you with Jim's contact information if you're interested in a platform to just do some development, like installing your own BuddyPress or ELG site or whatever it may be. So,
cool.
Yeah, so thanks, Jim.
Want to take advantage of that, let us know, and we'll get you hooked up.
Definitely. All right, moving on. Via Digo, we learned about a Lifehacker article. Tom Rosenau out of Pigeon, Michigan, shared how to prevent accidental spending on in-app purchases on your iPhone. And it says apparently there was a five-year-old who managed to spend $2,500 in 15 minutes with in-app purchases. That's kind of scary.
That's a shopper in training.
Yeah, there you go. And so there are ways to lock down your iPhone to prevent that and require passwords and things like that. And Tom made the great comment that this might be a good idea if you're using iPads in the classroom. You want to make sure you have these preventative things in place. So for those of you with iPads in a classroom setting, maybe you want to check out this article.
Very cool. Thanks, Tom.
We also heard from Rachel Pearson, who's at Trinity in Waukesha, and this was just a brief tweet. She asked if Lutheran educators would want to start a Wells Ed chat, a Twitter chat stream with the hashtag #WellsEd. And so if you're interested, maybe you want to tweet Rachel back and get that movement going. Next up, via Pinterest, I had to share something on Pinterest. It
we
was
had to get
infographic.
Pinterest in the show. We'd gone like 2 weeks without any Pinterest reference. So,
and this is actually a great blog article I was reading from the Languages blog, an EdTech blog. But this is kind of a global topic. It's called Anatomy, Grammar, Syntax, and Taxonomy of a Hyperlink. And I think she did a really great job. She's explaining kind of how hyperlinks work. And then she's getting into some of the grammar and syntax of good hyperlinks. So you don't say, check out this link
stuff.
Or put this gigantic, ugly link in your thing. And she tied it all together on an infographic, which I think is really well done and would be good for anyone who's working on websites to take notice of. So check out the Languages infographic, and you can find it on our Pinterest board. We'll have a link to it in our show notes as well.
Cool. I like it.
And then finally, a few tips from our friend, Pastor Rob Gunther, who's always got great tech and ministry things to share, as evidenced by our show and interview with him last week. Yep. He uses otherinbox.com, or he just discovered otherinbox.com. to get to zero inbox. It helps you unsubscribe to junk mail you don't want, and it'll integrate your shipment tracking emails with your Google Calendar. So sounds like a nice plug-in for your Gmail. He also wrote back to us to let us know about how he's doing his audiobook. Interestingly, Amazon has a platform creator for creating audiobooks to go into Audible, which is also an Amazon company. I didn't realize that.
Yep, just about a year ago they did that.
And so, I think one of the questions we had posed to him, because we had just heard about this and didn't get to ask him in the interview, was whether he was going to record his own audiobook. And he wrote to say that he chose not to. He didn't want to commit the time, and he didn't think he had high quality enough gadgetry to do the recording. And they will provide a professional to do the recording for you. And in a reasonable time frame, they'll commit to getting it done fairly quickly. And the drawback then would be that they'll share in your profits of your audiobook. So I think he said it was a 50-50 split with the producer, basically. So he evaluated it, thought it was worth having a professional do the reading. And so we'll be anxious to hear when his audiobook is available. And
that's exciting. I bet he's excited too.
Yeah,
that's
cool. Very exciting. It was funny in a post-conversation, I wrote back and said, plus you get to share the gospel with the person that gets the privilege of reading your book. So
at least one
soul reached.
That's right.
There you go. So,
right.
And then finally, I think this was a make use of fine, but the Pebble Watch. Have you seen this? The iPhone on your watch. And make use of has five alternatives. If you can't afford or wait for the Pebble, there's other similar watches out there. So fun.
That's the new trend, I think, Sally. It's what, it's those watches that a lot of people have given up right now because, you got your time on your cell phone. But the Pebble was one of those Kickstarter projects that actually came through and made enough money to actually produce a product. So
cool. So are you getting a watch?
No,
soon?
I don't wear a watch anymore.
Three phones is enough.
Yeah, that's right. Between the three, I can figure out what time it is.
Okay. Good deal.
All right. I'm also excited about next week. The hot topic in Wells circles is Bible translations. And there's a whole shakeup of digital Bibles online. Sometimes, one day the NIV 84 is there, the next day it's not. So we'll be talking about that. And we'll be talking with Pastor John Schrader, who served on the Translation Feasibility Study Committee. Remember, there were two committees, the Translation Evaluation Committee, TEC, and then the TFS, the Translation Feasibility Study Committee. They were looking at, is it feasible for us to write our own Bible translation? So you will not want to miss that interview and a general conversation about e-Bibles or digital Bibles and, where we go from here. So tune in next week for all that good stuff.
Martin, I have a great idea for an app.
Okay.
We need a Wells acronym lookup app, since we have a few of those that we have to contend with.
That would be awesome. That would take some time, but
yeah.
We probably have at least 100 or 200 acronyms we could throw in there. We could make a little quiz, at the end, too.
Right, and we could even make up some more, because it is the Wells way.
We make them up every Cine Convention. So
yeah, there
we
you go.
We got one coming up this summer, so... All right, let's close the show with some Lenten themed music, Via Dolorosa from Revelation. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.